How do you raise a black son in America? That's the subject of an electrifying TED Talk New Orleans native Clint Smith gave in March of 2015.
All of my black friends were raised with the same message, the talk given to us when we became old enough to be mistaken for a nail ready to be hammered to the ground, when people made our melanin synonymous with something to be feared. But what does it do to a child to grow up knowing that you cannot simply be a child, that the whims of adolescence are too dangerous for your breath, that you cannot simply be curious, that you are not afforded the luxury of making a mistake, that someone's implicit bias might be the reason you don't wake up in the morning?
We'll link you to Clint's entire TED Talk at hereandnow.org. But since that talk, news headlines have made more non-black Americans aware of the talk that parents give their African-American sons. The way Clint described it is poetry, and that makes sense. Clint Smith is also the 2014 National Poetry Slam champion. He's now a doctoral candidate at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, and he's published his first book of poetry. It's called Counting Descent, and Clint Smith joins us in the studio. Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine and better now. This slim volume has so much in it. I want to talk about it. But how long has this been your pursuit through poetry, through spoken word, examining being a black man, thinking of having been a young black man?
I've been writing poetry and taking it seriously since about 2008, 2009. I had a summer internship in New York City, and I went to the New Eurekan Poetry Cafe, which is a famous poetry cafe on the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. New Eurekan, New York, Puerto Rican, right?
Indeed, yeah. Yes. And so I went there and was just incredibly blown away by so much of the work that I saw, and had never been so viscerally moved by art as I had that evening. And I left, and I was kind of like, I don't know what this is, but I want to do it. And so I've been writing since then, and then I started graduate school the same week that Mike Brown was killed.
In Ferguson.
Yes. And so it was impossible for me to sort of disentangle everything that I was learning of U.S. inequality, and specifically through the lens of race, and then seeing the current sort of manifestations and residue of that history served as catalyst to write this collection. I think for me it was a means of sort of processing and humanizing and seeking to grapple with what we were seeing at that time.
The TED Talk that we listened to actually became a poem in your collection, at least part of it did. It's called Counterfactual.
Mm-hmm.
Can you read that for us now?
Counterfactual. When I was 12 years old, on a field trip someplace I can't remember, my friends and I bought super soakers, turned the hotel parking lot into a water-filled battle zone. We hid behind cars, running through the darkness that lay between the streetlights, boundless laughter across the pavement. Within 10 minutes, my father came outside, grabbed me by my forearm, and led me into our room, his too tight grip unfamiliar. Before I could object, tell him how foolish he had made me look in front of my friends, he derided me for being so naive. Told me I couldn't be out here acting the same as these white boys. Can't be pretending to shoot guns. Can't be running in the dark. Can't be hiding behind anything other than your own teeth. I know now how scared he must have been. How easily I could have fallen into the empty of the night. That some man would mistake that water for a good reason to wash all of this away.
That's very painful.
And I think part of what I've been thinking a lot about, and it's reflected in this collection, is what I call like the pedagogy of black parenting. And what does it mean for black parents to raise their children in a world that is often taught to fear them? And how does one navigate what is the sort of marathon of cognitive dissonance that it is to grow up in a home in which you feel loved, affirmed, and celebrated, and then going out into a world that has been taught to fear you as a result of nothing that you have done to deserve it? And I think that's the difficult balance that many black parents and people raising black children seek to find, is how do you let your children know about the realities that exist in the world without making them feel like they have done something to deserve the realities that they'll experience.
Did you have a chance? Is your father still with us?
Yes.
And what did he think of that?
One of the wonderful things about being a writer, and one of the wonderful things about this book, is that it necessitated that I go have conversations with my parents to get clarification, to get understanding.
Is this the way I remember it? Is this what's true? Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. And it's funny. Memory is an interesting thing, because sometimes we'll have different ways that we've remembered certain events, and many of the poems reflect that sort of coalescence of memory.
Boy, if I was your dad and I saw this work from this kid that I yanked out of the parking lot, 15 years earlier, I think I'd bawl.
There were a few tears. He has a penchant for the dramatic. So I remember during my book release in New Orleans, I have a poem specifically about him. That's not necessarily in the book, but I often read it at my readings because I think it made the work in the rest of the book possible. It's called My Father is an Oyster. And when I was reading the poem at my book release, he like ran up in front of everybody after the poem and he like smacked me on the butt and everybody got a kick out of that.
Can you give me a stanza? Your dad is an oyster.
My father is an oyster, clasped down tightly on the things he loves the most, his family and his God. He has a calcium-encrusted heart cradled tightly in his chest. Bear scars worn from waves that have tried to erode him of this world. My father is an oyster. And I pray that when he is pulled from this ocean, that those who live above the surface will see the brilliance of his pearls.
Lovely. And we'll have the whole reading of the poem at hereandnow.org. Clint Smith, you have kind of a genre of poems. What the fill-in-the-blank said to the black boy, what mm-hmm. the ocean said to the black boy, what the cicada said to the black boy. I'd love for you to read a little of what the cicada said to the black boy. But it's almost as if the natural world is speaking to the young black boy. What are you trying to say with those poems?
I've been thinking a lot about the nature of conversation and dialogue that happens between a black child and their parents. And as a sort of artistic endeavor, I was imagining what it might look like to think of what inanimate or non-living or non-human objects, what would they say? Would they provide warning? Would they provide solace? Would they provide advice? And the sort of arc of the book is one that is beginning with a sort of disillusion with violence and then moving into a sort of resilience and a saying that we will not be defined or singularly defined by that which seeks to kill us or that which seeks to render us obsolete. And so I wrote about a dozen of these poems sort of following that arc, and five of them ended up in the book. And this is what the cicada said to the black boy. I've seen what they make of you, how they render you a multiplicity of mistakes. They have undone me as well. Pulled back my shell and feasted on my flesh, claimed it was for their survival. And they wonder why I only show my face every 17 years, but you're lucky if they let you live that long. I could teach you some things, you know. Have been playing this game since before you knew what breath was. This here is prehistoric. Why you think we fly? Why you think we roll in packs? You think these swarms are for the fun of it? I would tell you that you don't roll deep enough. But every time you swarm, they shoot. Get you some wings, son. Get you some wings.
Hmm. Yeah. But you also point out that so many young black men do have wings. Hmm. Now, I hesitate to go right to the basketball poems because, as you say in one of the poems called Ode to the Only Black Kid in the Class, you're everybody's best friend until you're not. Hip-hop lyricologist, presumed athlete. So we don't presume that, you know, every young black man, this will resonate for every young black man, but you do also give a young black man a poem about what poetry their jump shot is. I mean, one of the poems is My Jump Shot. Or, you know, The Boy and His Ball, another one, how soaring, ballet-like they are. Here's the paragraph. How when the boy dribbles, he looks like he's dancing. How he's got capoeira in his hips. How his feet have never learned to fatigue. Capoeira, the Brazilian martial arts form where they're doing hands-free cartwheels, for instance. What an image. This is not all about oppression.
No, certainly. I think that was really important for me. You know, I think to put it in historical context, the first slaves were brought to this country in 1619. The Emancipation Proclamation was signed in 1863. Civil War ended in 1865. The Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act were 1964 and 1965. And so there have only been 50 years in which black people have even had a semblance of legal and legislative freedom in this country. And for seven times longer than that, for 350 years prior, it was fundamentally legal to discriminate against, to dehumanize, and to delegitimize the rights of black people in this country. And I don't think we put it in that arc of time often enough. But the thing is that amid all of that, amid a history in which black people have been subjected to an onslaught of incessant violence, we have still so remarkably embedded ourselves into the social and cultural fabric of this country. And to me, that's remarkable. And, you know, I grew up in a home full of joy, affirmation, laughter, and I wanted to capture that as well. And kind of like I said before, we are not We're not singularly defined by that which seeks to kill us or that which seeks to render us obsolete. And what I didn't want to do was write a book that would at all suggest that the definitive metric of what it meant to be black in this country was the violence you experience. And one of the most important things is to remember that although we have been subjected to violence, although that is a real and fundamental part of the sort of diasporic experience in this country, another huge part of that is all that we have done in spite of it, and all the joy that we have cultivated in the midst of an otherwise very violent world.
So when a young man ties his shoelaces to go play basketball, the loops fall on either side of his foot like halos. Mm. You make him an angel.
Indeed.
That's Clint Smith. We'll link you to his 2015 TED Talk and more about his first book of poetry, Counting Descent. Clint, thanks so much.
Thank you.